Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Spingola Zone, and this is Deanna Spingola. It is Monday, June 16th, 2014. This weekly program is sponsored by the American Free Press, whose website is AmericanFreePress.net. I have been a subscriber to the American Free Press for some time and highly recommend a subscription to that newspaper. I also wish to commend the wonderful historical journal, the Barnes Review, which I have been getting for several years. I first became acquainted with them back in 2007 when I was at a conference, and I was just thrilled with some of the things that I read in their magazine. Please visit both websites. The Barnes Review is barnesreview.org, and Barnes is spelled B-A-R-N-E-S, barnesreview.org. Support the efforts of those people who report accurate history and contemporary events. My websites are spingola.com and spingolaspeaks.wordpress.com. We will be taking questions and comments from the listeners via my email, comment@spingola.com, or from the chat room, spingola.chatango.com. All righty, our guest today is Tony Pantelaresco. His website are, well, it is, augmentinforce.50webs.com, and of course that is on the schedule page. And he also has a YouTube channel, which is absolutely fabulous. He has at least a couple hundred YouTube videos where he shows you how to make things that are going to be helping you so that you can avoid using those chemicals produced by Big Pharma. Tony, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Great. Now, yesterday you mentioned taurine, and you sent me a lot of information via Skype after the program on RBN. And so I did kind of reformat that a little bit, and I put it up on my website so that the listeners may find out what to use taurine for, because that is something that you just introduced me to just in the last couple of weeks. And, I mean, there's a lot of benefits. Now, where do you purchase that?
You can get it at any health food store. I mean, you can even go to Pure Bulk if you want to go there and buy it by the bulk, which I would encourage. It would be a lot cleaner source sometimes. Sometimes you can buy it in a powder form as well in the health food store. Usually, where you'll find that particular amino is in the bodybuilding section, because a lot of times the health food industry is polarized to, you know, market things a certain way, and so it'll be in the bodybuilding section usually, because they use it a lot of times for even regulating insulin, and they'll use it again in regard to for nerve and for again recovery from heavy duty training. But it has a ton of benefits. It's the second most abundant amino acid in your body, next to glutamine. It helps balance off the glutamic acid in the brain. I mean, it regulates the heart. It can actually detoxify the body of some heavy metals that you're exposed to, especially in terms of nanoparticulates that you might be being exposed to. It is a sulfur-based amino acid. It does convert from taurine to methionine, to cysteine, to glutathione in the Krebs cycle. So it is probably an overlooked amino, because everybody's looking at, you know, having growth hormone and getting the arginine for nitric oxide so you can, you know, your reproductive organs will work better, or you'll have bigger muscles, or they'll sell you something called alanine, again, for muscle and all this. But this is a very key amino, especially for those who have a compromised heart, who may have compromised vision, or you may have some form of metal toxicity as well.
Okay, so that's great. So as I mentioned before, I did make a list of all the benefits that Tony shared with me yesterday. In fact, I just posted it in the chat room. and so people can see all the benefits. And you said that you could get that from Pure Bulk, did you say?
Yeah, not just Pure Bulk, but purebulk.com or any, there's a lot more companies coming out now selling vitamins or aminos in powdered form where you can buy them in bulk. So when you're looking for stuff, they do sell it sometimes in the health food store. There were some companies years ago, I mean, I haven't bought it in a while from the health food store, but there were companies that were selling it in a pure form, in a pure powdered form. So, I mean, it's accessible either way. So, I mean, depending on where you live, obviously, because I have found through correspondence with people that a lot of times what I am assuming can be gotten almost anywhere, some places they can't. You know, New York is one that I've talked with people who, for some reason, they don't, they can't get a lot of stuff. So.
Interesting. One of the questions that I would like to ask you is, you tell people, you encourage people to do their own research on this. What is a good source? What is a go-to source to find out the benefits of all of these various things that are available that people can purchase and make their own capsules with? What is the best source for doing that?
Like buying the material or doing the research?
The research.
That's a tough one because okay, even PubMed's a good resource to start off with, or NIH, but you really have to understand the way they do the studies and the way they format the studies. We were looking at one study about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, on artemisinin, for instance, for breast cancer. So when you looked at the study, it sounded really good. Oh, wow, I can get wormwood here and, you know, combine it and make it and blah, blah, blah. But when you looked at the study and seen how they actually formulated this, it was virtually impossible for it to work because they were taking literally something like 500,000 pounds and putting it in a 500 milliliter bottle. It's just virtually impossible.
Right.
So you have to really understand, you know, when you're reading these studies, just because you read the study doesn't mean it's so, and you have to really interpret what you're reading. You have to interpret how the study was done, what the target point of the study was. So you have to really read, when you read, you have to read with some sort of scrutiny here. You know, they... just because the study failed to produce a result in one thing, that's what they were targeting. Doesn't mean it doesn't work. It just means it didn't work for that particular targeted research. So you have to, you know, you have to have some kind of perception here on what you're reading. Quertle.com is another good place you can go to. Quertle.com. You can go science.com, sciencedoc.com. Science Daily sometimes has some good stuff. Again, you have to validate that. You know, there are databases out there floating around, and you can, you know, grab the databases. And if you start, even if you do a search engine search, whichever search engine you choose, I don't like Google. I think Google's a waste of time most of the time. You got to go through about 50 pages before you get to the real nitty-gritty on some of their stuff, because they're that search engine is specifically designed for marketing, and you got to realize that's what it is. You may get some ideas looking at some of the marketing sites from there, but then go on another search engine and do some real research, even a university. Another good place to go is Free Patents Online. If you go and look at some of the patents that were done on some of these products, you can see how they've been used, utilized. You can see sometimes they'll even give you some of the end results of some of the product that they've patented. Again, these are some ideas. Again, looking up on university sites, sometimes you can find a lot of good information there. A lot of the information you want to really look at is stuff that was actually done in the 50s, maybe early 60s, 40s, 30s, 20s. A lot of the research after the 80s becomes extremely clouded. There was, I think, purposely things were done in the 80s to create a lot of disinformation in the health food industry. Things that were really working or were effective, they kind of, you don't see anymore or hear about, and stuff that they're promoting. For instance, they're promoting high levels of vitamin D, which can create a pineal calcification if you take too much. Again, they're promoting this like crazy. So you have to Google it.
How much is too much?
I don't think anybody should be taking any more than 1,000 or 2,000 IUs, and that's in the winter months. Summer months, if you must take vitamin D, no more than 100 to 200 IUs. You can get your vitamin D from either using yogurt, kefir, cottage cheese, butter. These are really good sources of vitamin D, so you really don't need to be going out of your way to buy lots of vitamin D. And a lot of vitamin D's today products are coming from fish oil products, which again are usually loaded with mercury or arsenic. So I'm not a real big fan of vitamin D unless it's from a source other than fish. And again, you don't need a lot of it. Again, just like calcium. Calcium was another one that was insanely overloading women. And when they're telling you to take 1,500 to 2,000 IUs milligrams of calcium, that was beyond belief stupid. No more than 300 milligrams a day max, if that. And if that's combined properly, you'll be able to utilize it. If not, basically what winds up happening is you get an accumulation in the joints, and then you wind up with severe cases of arthritis or even possible stones in the kidneys or in the gallbladder. So again, a lot of this stuff has, again, a lot of it's just been disinformation from the word get-go. You got to remember, there is an element to use to weaponize almost anything that we're doing today, and you have to understand the nature of this weaponization. When we're looking at marketing, for instance, in the vitamin industry or in the health food industry, you get the research, right? This is going to do X, Y, Z, 1, 2, 3, A, B, C. But then they sell you these products and they're formulated, but nobody actually studies or stops and thinks, well, why am I taking so much of a mineral, any mineral for that matter, when your body can only assimilate so much, and then the rest of it, the kidneys can't flush it out or you can't excrete it out, it accumulates. So again, nobody's really thinking in those terms. So, and because everybody's trusting, right? Everybody say, well, yeah, this has got to be healthy. It's coming from the health food industry. So, and that's the assumption.
Right. Oh my goodness. Let's talk about cancer. So many people have cancer. It used to be 1 in 50 would get it, and now it is just, it's almost like 1 in 3 or 1 in 4. I don't know the exact statistics.
Well, it depends where you live. If you live where I live, we have the highest cancer rate in all of Ontario.
Wow. What is the rate there?
I think 1 out of 2.
Oh, my goodness.
So again, but that has to do with the genetics of the genetics of people are eating, the chemtrails, the nanoparticles they're consuming as well in their foods or cosmetics, the chemicals they're being exposed to from the pollution. I mean, we've got a lot of factors here that, even Detroit is the same thing. It's like something like 1 out of 2. You have to understand that the automotive industry was not a very clean industry, and it does its best to promote this green concept with marketing. I mean, you got to remember Detroit River, the River Rouge. If you go over River Rouge from Detroit on a hot day, you're about at least 1,000 feet above the water, and then you can smell that crap coming out of the Ford plant. So if you're down like near Allen Park or down on the west end of Windsor, you get a good whiff of this crap. So again, we've got a high rate of cancers here. And again, cancer is the boogeyman that they've scared everybody with. And it's really a very simple thing to eliminate just by certain changes you can make and taking certain components. And you can clean it up. Usually 8 out of 10 people can beat it if they make the dietary changes. Number one, eliminating all grains and soy, because this will perpetrate the cancers. Any processed sugars need to be completely eliminated. Red meat needs to be completely eliminated. Tap water needs to be completely eliminated. Anything out of a box, bag, or a can is not even in your vocabulary. Your diet is going to be consisting of things of teas or supplements that are going to help boost the immune system or trigger an immune response to eliminate this. You're going to be using things that are going to flush the system and renewing the blood. And so thereby strengthening the organs. You're going to be using things like iodine, high doses of vitamin C, again, to regenerate the telomeres back to normal with the vitamin C and the iodine to restore the glands. So it's not that complicated to fix. It just takes time. And there's more than one method. Even aspirin, people don't realize this, but aspirin, if you get an aspirin that doesn't have a polymer in it or a yellowing agent or a binding agent, you don't want one that's time released. But aspirin kills 8 different cancers, pancreatic cancer, intestinal cancers, respiratory cancers, stomach cancers. I mean, this is just some of the stuff that aspirin will kill, but they don't tell you. And you can do the research on that to validate that, too.
Oh, my goodness. Well, there are some people that I know that they're already on a feeding tube. The cancer has been very aggressive, and they've pretty much been given a few weeks to live. Is it too late to...
No. We had a woman that came seen us about 30 years ago. We gave her 4 weeks to live, and we gave her the same protocol I just mentioned here. We gave her 3 things. We gave her the SCACT, and I'm not talking, the SCACT I'm talking about has got only the 4 herbs, not the other one.
Okay. Now, is that the SCACT that is available at AmeriHerb?
I'm not sure which one they're formulating. It probably is. I mean, basically, there's just 4 herbs. Do not buy the one with the red clover in it, because the red clover is highly estrogenic, and especially for those women who may be having a estrogen overload or endocrine type cancers. That's one you want to avoid. You do not want to drink anything with Ensure or Boost or any of these canned soy products. That will exacerbate it further, causing it to proliferate even more. A lot of the research that you're seeing on that is really another one of those disinfo elements. The only thing soy is good for is fertilizer, and that's the only thing it should be used for. When you're using these things, like I said, she had 6 weeks to live. 4 weeks later, they decided to do a biopsy on her lymphatic, found that there was no cancer. Her cancer went from her lymph nodes down up in her breast area down to her liver. Basically, you're pretty well nailed in coffin. You know, we're putting you under the ground, and she beat it. So, and we had, when I was down in Arizona, I was giving people the same formula there, and we had a kid there that was, they basically tried to kill this kid. They irradiated his esophagus, so he couldn't eat. His father was feeding him through a tube down near his lower extremities, and he was giving him that Ensure crap, and his son was literally almost dead. So we got him on the 3 things, the IP6, SCACT, and the defraction mitoxin. I got him on unpasteurized milk, raw milk. 3 weeks later, this kid comes wobbling through the store, coming back to life. So, yeah, it can be done.
Oh, my goodness. Now, how much of this stuff? I mean, you mentioned aspirin. You mentioned, let me get back to this SCACT. I'm sorry. I have more questions than we have time. SCACT blend is what it lists in AmeriHerb.
Okay.
SCACT blend, 1.4 pounds. Talisman, there is both talisman, and both of them are blends.
Okay. Well, the one that I know of, the one we use here, has got the burdock, sheep sorrel, Turkish rhubarb, and, there's one more in there.
Where do you buy that?
Anywhere. You can get that at almost any health food store. They sell it. We modified the one in our store. We've added chaparral, seaweed, and black walnut with it, again, for parasites and for iodine support, because these things do produce iodine, which, again, renew the glands. And the chaparral, which is also another powerful cancer killer. That formulation with a change of diet, we've seen, like I say, we have seen 8 out of 10 people beat it, depending on, again, the types of cancers and, again, how quick you catch it. Sometimes it can take a while. We've tried the DCA with some of this, and I'm not really impressed with the dichloroacetic acid. I've not seen it work any better than anything else, so I'm not really, it's there. For some people, it may work better. I don't know, but so far with the people who have used it for the breast cancers, it hasn't really made that much of a difference. The other stuff has made more of it. We've got 2 women in Detroit using this stuff, and with the other formulations and the change, and they basically are reversing the cancer in their bodies, so...
Wow. Now, if somebody wants to contact you, to get personalized attention, personalized attention for whatever is bothering them, cancer or some other malady. How might they do that?
Well, it's three ways. You can Skype me. You can call me up. Call me on our phone number here at 519-977-5351. Or you can contact me if you're in the United States on my other line at 602-512-1230. Or you can email me. Usually at the back of our videos, there's an email you can reach me at if you have an issue going on. And we try to help you out in any way we can. We even try to show you where you can buy your stuff locally in your own local area. We actually encourage you that you support your local health food store. If you can, can't get the stuff, then by all means, give us a call. My consultation fees, all I charge is $35. I'm not trying to break the bank here on anybody. I understand when you're sick, you don't have the means and the funds. And sometimes, a lot of times, we do a pro bono here all the time, too, so we don't always charge. You know, if somebody's really sick and they're down and out, we help them.
Okay. There's a question in the chat room. Does vitamin C remove minerals from the body?
If in high excessive doses, it can. Again, when you're taking, depending on how high your dose is, if you've got a health condition, let's say you do have a cancer, with vitamin C, you want to take your body weight divided by 2.2 to get down to kilo. And then take the kilo number you're getting and multiply that by 350 milligrams, and that's your daily intake of vitamin C. And you want to be using at least 3 to 4 grams at a time, several times a day. So when you're using that kind of stuff, you might want to use some form of an ascorbate or make your own by adding baking soda and minerals into the vitamin C and taurine, if you wish, because taurine helps you assimilate and designate some minerals in the body more effectively. And by doing that, then you won't have nothing to worry about. And in fact, by adding the minerals to the body, you will again fortify your body. Because sodium kills cancer, potassium kills cancer, magnesium kills cancer. So you've got other elements that can help you in your fight there.
Wow. Amazing when you think that the industry, the cancer industry, which is just out for profit, they charge thousands and thousands of dollars and fill your body with chemicals, and it is the radiation, the chemotherapy, the cutting, all the things that they do that cost so much money that actually kill people.
Well, you have to understand, they're in the business of making money. And you know, when you look at the Rockefellers, when they got started, believe it or not, they used to sell health products. One of the products they used to sell was turpentine, which cured a lot of ailments. And they realized that it's healing people where there's no money in it. So then they went into the other end of it, where if you were sick, then you can make money. And you have to understand, too, again, we're going back to science. And the science today that we're talking, medical science today, you know, they've not cured nothing. They haven't cured anything in over 70 years. They have not stopped anything, really. They've postponed things, if that. You know, their vaccines, some will argue, well, since we've had vaccinations, we haven't had these diseases. What we've had as a result of these vaccinations is a higher rates of cancer. So they have tied vaccines directly to cancer extension. So we haven't cured anything. You know, we've created more problems. We have created more illnesses. So when you're talking medical pharmacopoeia today, it's not designed to heal. It's designed to perpetuate a condition or to debilitate. It has nothing to do with healing. I mean, can you imagine you're going in and you're getting radioactive material spread all over your body? You're getting, high levels of chemicals in your body that are not, you know, that kill the body essentially. We're killing the cancer, but we're killing you too. I mean, and again, they got everybody believing that this is the only method out there, and the success rate is next to nothing. Yeah, their idea of a successful cancer victim, their idea of a successful cancer victim is if you survive 5 years. If you don't survive 5 years, you're dead. Usually, you're dead within the 5 year time frame under their methodology. So you don't. You're just existing.
And giving them money.
Yeah, or somebody's giving them something. Yeah, and if once you run out of money, well.
Sure.
Say to me.
Sure.
Nice knowing you.
Oh, my goodness. Now, I was reading that there are 70 million people in this country that have some sort of a digestive issue. What are the best things to do for digestive issues? And I think a lot of this, too, is related to vaccines. Well, I think a lot of diseases are actually injected into our body. I know that cancer was part of the polio vaccine. But tell us a little bit about the digestive issues and how people can get over some of the, like Crohn's disease. And
the first thing you have to eliminate is soy and grain, cereals, bread. That has to go. Reason being is because of the genetics of these foods no longer work with the body, and they actually attack that part of your body. The two things that genetics attacks, the two main things, attacks everything, but the two main things it seems to attack the most, the reproductive and the digestive. All the Crohn's, IBS, leaky gut, all that is the same disease at different stages, and as long as you're going to keep eating the grains, you will not be able to function properly, you will not be able to digest your foods at all. You will not be able to convert your B vitamins the way you're supposed to, and this is why so many people are having dementia issues and Alzheimer issues, is because a lot of the toxins that the body is producing is going through the liver, which is bypassing the blood-brain barrier, which is accumulating there. So the soy has to go. It attacks thyroid, thymus, esophagus, stomach, intestine, you know. It's a depleter of key B vitamins, the key minerals which are required to produce enzymes for your body to process things. The grains themselves are highly mycotoxic and highly estrogenic because of the genetics involved in making these things or growing these things. So again, they shut that down. So that's the first thing you have to eliminate. Second thing you can do, again, depending on the situation, again, this is not the end-all be-all for everybody, but including high levels of digestive enzymes, seems to help a lot of people, especially with the bloating and the gas. The hydrochloric acid, sometimes you have to increase that depending on the condition. A lot of people have GERD and high pylori issues, and that's usually a result of the grain and the soy. So a lot of times once you eliminate that, it takes a couple weeks, the digestive system starts to come back online, and you may need to, again, incorporate more hydrochloric acid or digestive enzymes in order to digest your food. And finally, if you using any kind of fermented foods, usually when someone's got that kind of a compromise, you get them on a fermented food, soup and tea and juice diet for a while to help, again, give the system a chance to rest. It's a form of fasting, but at the same time, you're putting in the body key nutrients and key bacteria in the system to help, again, break things down. The enzymes and the juices and can, again, help the soups, again, for instance, a gelatin broth, which can actually help repair the stomach lining and the esophageal intestinal lining. These would be strongly encouraged, and then start slowly reintroducing foods other than the grains, the soy, and all the other stuff.
Okay, what is it? what's in a gelatin broth?
Basically, just gelatin, and add whatever you want to add to it. You want to add garlic, pepper, salt.
Okay. Gelatin.
Gelatin basically is the regenerator of the body. It's one of the best things you can use. You know, it'll regenerate the esophagus, the stomach, the intestines, the joints, the muscle, the bone. I mean, when you look at gelatin, the components of gelatin, I mean, it can help with teeth reconstruction, bone density, muscle tone, muscle strength, you know, hair growth, nail growth. I mean, it is probably pound for pound one of the best things you can use to help regenerate the body, and in conjunction with other herbs or other elements. Back in the day, they were using gelatin to transfer minerals. So let's say you're using something like Shilajit. You can mix that in the soup so that the gelatin can help, again, transfer it into the system more efficiently.
Huh. Now, what is the best source of gelatin?
It's all the same. Pretty well, it's all the same. Once they break it down to the aminos, it doesn't matter where it's coming from. It's pretty well the same, whether it's coming from a horse, a pig, a fish, a cow, a sheep.
Okay.
It's all the same by the time it's done.
Okay. So you're talking about like Knox gelatin, or are you talking about bone broth, where you take some bones and you just, you know, simmer them for hours and hours to get the gelatin out of the bones?
Same thing. They're both the same. Either from the bone, from the skin, from the hooves, any part of the body that has a high level of cartilage, that's where they usually get it from. It doesn't matter whether it comes from that, whatever format. Like I said, it's all the same.
Okay, and that will also help, like knee cartilage and that kind of thing, because we do have listeners who have problems with bone-on-bone in their knees. And so would that help with that kind of situation?
It should. I mean, it should. We've given it to people here. For glucosamine and chondroitin to work, if you don't have enough the raw materials from gelatin, it's not as effective. Using lysine and vitamin C is another way you can do it to help again collagen production, because that's what, as part of the matrix, we're making collagen. So again, you can get any kind of mixture there together, but the gelatin, any gelatin we'll get. There's usually four kinds in the market. There's a beef, porcine, fish, and a chicken. And they're primarily all the same, just the sources are different. So those who are opposed to eating pork, for instance, I always tell them that by the time it gets down to that element, there's no more pork left, it's just aminos. But then again, people have a psychological issue with it, so they've got a beef, they've got a fish, and they've got a chicken as well.
Okay. A question from the chat room. What about the thyroid's relation to cancer? Thyroid affects every cell in the body.
Okay, so then fix the thyroid. All right, so iodine should be there. Anything you use that's going to purify the blood is going to affect the thyroid, because everything that your body goes through the thyroid. That's the way it works. And so, again, healing the thyroid basically of cancers, again, it's the same principle applies. You know, you're going to be using foods that are not going to be agitating the thyroid. For instance, you're not going to be using the cruciferous vegetables. Those are to be avoided. Your daikons, your radishes, your mustard greens, your cauliflower, your broccoli, that is to be completely avoided, contrary to what you're hearing, because these vegetables can further damage the thyroid. You do need iodine. You do need tyrosine. You do need selenium. Selenium and iodine are very key for the thyroid to maintain itself. Using the SCACTs will help again with this as well. And again, no soy, absolutely. I would have to say soy would probably be the biggest contributor to the thyroid cancers. The studies that were done in Asia say that they have a higher level of thyroid cancers, four times more so than the Westerners, unless they're eating soy like they are in Asia. But they say they have four times the higher rates of thyroid cancers, pancreatic cancers, esophageal and digestive cancers than they do here in the West. Now, again, that study was done quite some time ago, so considering the amount of soy they've been selling and propagating here in the United States and Canada, those numbers are probably just as high here.
Wow. Okay, on the list of talking about soy, well, let's talk about kelp. What is your recommendation? Should people be using kelp or kelp granules or kelp powder because of the mercury that we associate with ocean fish and that kind of thing?
To be quite honest with you, I don't even bother with kelp. You just go straight to iodine. The level of load we have today, these products that are being sold in a health food store are negligible at best. One bottle of some of the seaweed iodines that they're selling, one whole bottle would be equivalent to one drop of either a Lugol's iodine or a Iodoral. So that's not even cost effective, nor is it going to be that effective. When you're talking about 0.225 or 0.625, that's basically what? Nothing. We need to get back to the real deal, not some sort of
right.
Placebo.
Sure. Okay.
Now remember, we're dealing with a completely different dichotomy today. You know, these things that they're selling in the health food store today, 40, 50 years ago, might have been effective because we weren't exposed to things we were exposed to today. Genetic engineering of foods was not there. You know, it was in its infancy and they were developing it, so it hadn't been put out in the field yet. And you have to understand, up until 1986, the United States, which also affected Canada, had a Delaney Act. Under the Delaney Act, you could not sell anything to anybody in the United States that could cause cancer. So a lot of this stuff had to be pretty well grown in a certain way and had a higher level of nutritional value and didn't have the toxic overload. Okay, so after 1986, that was amended. Then you're talking, you know, the sweeteners we've gone through, from, you know, sugar to cyclamate to aspartame to sucralose to neotame. You know, we have, again, devolved, you know, in the name of health. You know, when you're talking chemtrails, we've had no chemtrails. We had some kind of chemtrail activity after 1945, which was called chaff, but nothing compared to what we have today. You know, when you're talking nanoparticles in our food supply, I mean, just we have a completely different set of parameters today, and we have to deal with things from a completely different perspective. So, you know, when we're talking, you know, targeting genetic engineering of our bodies, you know, DNA disruption, chromosomal damage, you know, reproductive damage, digestive damage, you know, respiratory issues, heart issues, a lot of the issues that were affecting us 50 years ago that was causing this and what's causing it today are two different things. So we have to deal with these things in a more elaborate way today than we did years ago. 50 years ago, 0.225 milligrams of a seaweed iodine might have been more than adequate to treat whatever or to help whatever, because of the level of exposure to toxins was not there. Today, I doubt very seriously they're going to have that kind of effect.
Wow. Well, talking about sweeteners, I was reading in a book this morning that the distributor of stevia decided that he would publish a book with some recipes on how to use stevia. And the FDA sent in, they sent in an enforcement, a task force. They burned his books. They went into the warehouse, they burned his books. And the reason being is that somebody on the FDA staff, one of the decision makers, had a financial interest in a competing company, in a company that produces, well, something like the bad aspartame or something like that. And it's amazing. I mean, he went in and burnt these books. And the FDA has sent in SWAT teams to doctors' offices to collect all these vitamins and all of that kind of thing. It is unbelievable how much power the FDA has assumed and how brutal they can be.
I'm not sure. I've heard about this, too. I don't know if this is a recent thing, but there was another situation. Maybe it's the same one. I don't know where that happened, but eventually the FDA backed off of stevia because the stevia now is being regulated by the FDA. And if you go into some of the grocery store chains or health food store chains, they have actually combined stevia with fructose, glucose, or some other. So it's in there, and they're allowing it now because they've compromised the product. I never was crazy about stevia. I always thought it had a horrid aftertaste. Until I got some stuff from Brazil, straight from Brazil. A friend of mine went down and brought me some stevia from there, and what a difference between what they're selling and what we're selling here. It was actually very palatable and very pleasant to use, the one from Brazil. So a lot of stuff, even like this agave crap that they're selling, this stuff is equivalent to high fructose corn syrup, but yet they're promoting this as some kind of, again, sugar alternative. And the issue is the way they make it down in those Hispanic countries and what they're doing here are two different things. So when we're looking at a lot of the some of the stuff that's being perpetrated and, you know, some of the things that are going on, I always encourage people, read your labels, because you might be surprised you're not buying the pure product you think you're buying.
Right. Okay, another question. And this is an issue, and you brought up soy. And somebody in the chat room said, soy should only be eaten after it has been fermented, such as miso, natto.
I've heard that, and you know what? That is such rubbish. Such rubbish. No matter what you do with soy, I don't care if you ferment it, I don't care if you wash it, whatever, it is just a toxic food. If you go on my webpage, I got four links. And if you want to really get down to the nitty-gritty on it, because the United States and Canada has been sold on this crap. And, I mean, I got Asian friends I know that won't even touch this stuff. And the fermentation process has to take 2 years and in line. That's the way the Chinese used to do it. Right now, what's going on is they're fermenting it for 3 months, some from 2 weeks to 3 months, depending on who's getting what. It's done in aluminum, and you're getting the aluminum content in the soy. And the phytate levels and the estrogenic levels in 3 months are at their highest peak. So if anybody's selling that bill of goods today, they are really misinformed, hugely. The Ministry of Health in Israel, I think back about 15 years ago, about the mid-90s, so the Solea Corporation was trying to patent soy. And the Ministry of Israel came right out and exposed that whole thing, that they were saying that nobody under the age of 18 should be consuming soy. The endocrine levels of endocrine disrupting levels of soy was so damaging and so bad that nobody under that age should be eating it. It had absolutely no nutritional value. And if you want to even go another step further, I've got a study on my webpage on the script of the show for June 2014. Look at the soy isoflavone link. I've got the studies that date back to the 1950s, and one study even presented the fact that soy, anybody that consumed soy back then, that the damage from soy consumption, whether regardless of how you ate it, 20 years later would feel the effect of the damaging aspects of soy.
Wow.
So up to 20 to 30 years they're going.
And now, which program is that?
If you go on my webpage.
Uh-huh, I'm there.
Okay, look at June 2014 in the description of the show.
Okay, got it.
Okay, there you'll see a soy isoflavone link. That's one there. You go on the main page, there's four studies. One was a United Nations study, an Israeli study, a European study, and the FDA has soy. 244 studies in the poison plant database. There's absolutely no value to eating this crap at all. I wouldn't feed it to a pig. And they have fed it to pigs, and what wound up happening was the pigs, when they went to produce other piglets, they all either came out deformed or just the sac came out. That's how bad this stuff was. When they fed the cows vegetable oil, which is soy-based, the cow has two stomachs. It hemorrhaged both of them.
Oh.
So again, do we really want to eat this stuff? Again, you have to understand, this business of soy was the reason why soy was even put in the health food industry to begin with, is because they were using soy and extracting soy products for industrial use. A lot of your car parts, a lot of your industrial parts were made from this stuff, so they had an overload of this mess. They had no place to dump it, so they decided to feed it to people, and they called it a health food, just like fluoride. You know, we've got fluoride there in toothpaste. Why is it there? Because same thing. They had an abundance of fluoride, and they had to dump it somewhere, so they decided it was easier to feed it to you. You excrete it into the sewer system, and then that saves these companies and these corporations tons of money. And that's how this all got started.
Holy cow. Okay. Let's see. Else. What about vinegar? I know vinegar is kind of it's been around for a long time. It's like hydrogen peroxide has been around for a long time. And people used to use vinegar more than they do now. Now, lots of times I'll just put a couple tablespoons in some filtered water and drink it throughout the day. Yep. And I use Bragg's apple cider vinegar with the mother still in it and everything. So tell us what good vinegar is.
Any vinegar will work. White vinegar will work. You can even consume that. It kills the HIV virus. People don't know this either. Red vinegar, red wine vinegar, any vinegar has benefit and merit. There's no rice vinegar. I mean, these are all good for you. You can use them any way, shape, or form. I don't get caught up on the mother thing. Mother's fine and wonderful. It's got the bacteria. It's great and all this stuff. But any vinegar will work. Balsamic vinegars will work for healing the body. It has an ingredient in it that does kill cancer. So, eliminates cancer. So, it helps with digestion because of the hydrochloric acid production it can produce. So there is benefits to vinegar. I mean, you can wash with it. You can kill mold with it. Let's say you got mold going on in your shower. Just take some vinegar, spray it on, wait a minute, and wipe it off, and it comes right off because it's anti-mold. So, again, it has benefits. I mean, the way I cook my meals, I'll put the vinegar in a pressure cooker with my chicken. Maybe put a cup, and the rest of it I'll put with herbs and water and whatnot, and I'll cook that right down. And by the time it's done, the meat is so tender, it falls off the bone, and the bone's completely edible. So when you're cooking,
wow.
You can eat, you can consume everything. So now you're getting stem cells from the marrow, you're getting the cartilage from the bone, the knuckles, you're getting the calcium and the phosphorus, you're getting the protein from the chicken. It's all complete. And then whatever you cook it with, so you're putting bay leaf or you're putting thyme, rosemary, garlic, whatever, now you're getting the antioxidant properties inside the meat as well. So it's, you know, it's something you can use in, even in your cooking.
Wow, that sounds kind of yummy.
I figured it'd get you hungry.
Yeah, that really does sound good.
Try that with any meat, lamb, whatever. If you got a bone, throw the whole thing in there. Add your vinegar to it. Add your water. Add whatever herbs or spices you want to add to it. You want to add salt or pepper or garlic or bay leaf or thyme or rosemary or savory, whatever. You know, let it pressurize in that pressure cooker, like fill it up to the line, and then basically let it cook for about 2 hours. And by the time it's done, it is, I don't care what you're cooking, animal protein-wise, fish, chicken, lamb, meat, whatever, it's so tender and it's so digestible because the acid has broken down those aminos in the meat, so it makes it more digestible. Even the bone, you'll be able to stick a fork in the bone and it'll crumble. And you'll be able to consume that as well.
Well, I know vinegar is great for washing windows with. Just spray it on your window and wipe it off, and it's real clean.
You want to make an Alka-Seltzer, a quick way of doing that is either using citric acid or vinegar and baking soda, and you've made Alka-Seltzer. Add a little water, 2 ounces of water, about a quarter to a half teaspoon of baking soda, 1 or 2 tablespoons of vinegar or citric acid, or lemon juice, and when she starts to fizz, you just made Alka-Seltzer.
Wow. All right. Somebody in the chat room said that they are allergic to garlic and onions and that kind of thing. I can't imagine being allergic.
Usually what happens with that is the sulfur in the onion and the garlic are reacting to something that's inside of them. Whether it be a metal component or something else or something in the liver, if they're having a reaction to the sulfur. They can try MSM to see if that will work. It's a different type of sulfur. But usually when that happens, that's what's going on.
You probably know about MMS, Miracle.
Yeah.
What are your views about that?
I think it's good. I think it's a good idea. It's a good product. I think it's going to be a necessity today. I am basically, it's using a type of chlorine, if you will. I'm going to call it what you will, chloride chlorine. But it's not dangerous. Again, with the pathogens that are coming out today and the type of genetically engineered bugs that we're being exposed to, this is probably going to be a very key defender for the body's immune system, just like iodine and silver and other things. I mean, GSE or even other herbals, but yeah, it's right up there. I mean, I don't use it myself. I mean, because I've got iodine, because I'm a big fan of iodine. I know, and I use iodine. I know a lot of things that people use other things for, and I see, you know, a good effect with the iodine. I use high levels of vitamin C as well. But yeah, MMS is the guy that came out with it and how it works. I think he hit it on the head.
Right. Alrighty. We are faced with a lot of heavy metals in our body, and when you consider that all of the amalgam that the dentists have used just in a year, I mean, I think it's tons of mercury. And this really does affect people. And in fact, a lot of people with mercury in their teeth will actually excrete it in their urine. They've tested it.
Okay. Well, the thing is, if you've got mercury amalgams in the teeth, you're still going to have to, again, use things that are going to pull mercury out. And you may lose some of the teeth as well, but that's not the issue. The issue is if you don't do anything, it's just going to accumulate more and more in the body. So iodine is one of the key things you can use, again, to pull mercury out of the system. If you want to use sulfur, you can do that as well. I mean, a combination of things that can pull it out. But you gotta remember, you're still accumulating it regardless of whether you do anything or not. So actually, if it's excreting out of the system through the urine, that means it's coming out, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Would you recommend that people replace those fillings with something else?
Yeah, I do. Unfortunately, right now, I don't see anything better than what's there, but I would definitely get the mercury. At least that would reduce the metal load. Some of the composites that they're using today, some of them are just as bad as the mercury. So, I mean, it would be a change for sure, but that's one way. You have to remember, the dental industry is no different than the medical industry in regard to being unregulated and, again, inflicting people with certain types of pathogens in an oral level. I mean, I've been to dentists for years, and I went to five different dentists. Three of them told me my teeth were lousy. Two of them told me I had good teeth. So then I asked one of them one time, I said, how is it these guys are saying I got lousy teeth, and this one's saying I got good teeth? And, basically it was a money game. And then I talked to one dentist who was actually legit, and he said, don't ever brush your teeth. That's the worst thing you could do. And he was showing how you can take a toothpick and just dig out underneath the gum line, which is that's where a lot of problems arise. And, and I've come up with a solution to help again regenerate some of the teeth and reverse cavities. So,
that in one of your videos?
We haven't done it yet. We will be.
Okay.
Basically, it's a very simple formula. You need 100 grams of a mixture of 90 grams of baking soda, which is approximately 6 tablespoons. And 2 teaspoons of trisodium phosphate. You're going to make sure it's the real TSP, not the stuff you buy at Home Depot in the United States, because that's not real TSP. It's just a name they call a product. You mix it together with about 24 ounces of water, and then you start rinsing your mouth off with that. You can dilute it if you want, about 1 ounce or 2 ounces in a cup, and then dilute it with some water and rinse your mouth off with it 4 or 5 times. Within about 10 days, you'll start seeing some reaction.
Wow. Okay, we're going to open the phone lines now. You may call 347. Oh, no, let's see. What number do we call? 347. Is that the number 215-7292? No. Yes. Okay. We do have a caller. Let's take this caller. 914. Caller 914.
Oh, is that me?
Yes.
Oh, hi, Deanna. I wish to thank you for your show.
I have gotten
so much information. And Tony, you're a godsend. And I thank you for the work that you're doing. Make it brief, my health, I'm trying to repair my health. I was born with a non-functioning thyroid. They didn't pick it up. I'm 61 today. They didn't pick up my thyroid until I was 38. So I was sick most of my life being fed antibiotics. I have now Hashimoto's thyroiditis. I have cyst breast. They took out my female organs because I had too many cysts there, so I had a hysterectomy. And I'm trying to repair my health. And I heard about your detox with the turpentine, and my question is, I once took an over-the-counter cough remedy that had pine tar, a substance called pine tar needles, and I had a very, very bad neurological effect. My vision was blurry. My gait was unstable. Can I take this turpentine?
You should be able to. Pine tar is like turpentine on steroids. So, I mean, it's super, super, super strong.
Okay.
And if it's not cut properly, it will overwhelm your system. There's no doubt. Turpentine can overwhelm your system if you take too much of it as well. So, again, if you're going to go that route, either mix it with oil, which I probably would encourage you to do instead of the sugar or the honey, so that it will penetrate more effectively. In your case, because of these cysts, this is a strong indication you have low iodine. So even if you start painting that on the skin, you may find that may actually do you more good than the turpentine. That would be, again, a good strong suggestion for you to go with. Using things like black walnut tea or seaweed, which have iodine in it, Irish moss, Iceland moss, which also have good levels of iodine in them, and other therapeutic or healing properties. These are things you might want to start incorporating. Make sure you are eliminating any soy in your diet. that has to go, or else that thyroid will never recover.
I have no soy whatsoever. I'm working with a homeopath now. I'm doing research. I don't know who to believe. I don't know which products are valid. So you don't think that am I taking, what is it, Iderol? Am I saying
Iderol is a Lugol, so I have no problem. Iderol is a very good product. I would encourage you to use Iderol for sure. I'm just saying, you can, there's more than one way of doing something, okay? So it's not like the end-all, be-all, you follow, my way and the only way. There's more than one way of doing things. Iodoro is a good product. I definitely would encourage you to use it. I'm just saying, if you had a Lugol's or whatever, you could even paint it on topically for absorption.
Where would I purchase that, Lugol's?
We got it here, but I'm sure if you're seeing a naturopath, they should be carrying it as well.
Some of
the health people carry it as well. So, you can check out your, I'm not sure where you are, but
I'm
check
in
out
New
your,
York.
New York. Yeah, you may have a problem finding stuff in New York. I've had a lot of people contact me, from the Brooklyn area, and they seem to they're having difficulty allocating some of the things I talk about on the YouTube. So, but yeah, shop around, try to get a 5% solution. That's what you really are looking for. See, talk to your naturopath. If he doesn't have it, they can make it.
Oh, no, she's just a homeopath. She doesn't have anything. My next move may be to a naturopath. They may have access to more things. But it's like, it's overwhelming to try to build my health up. I'm surprised I haven't developed full-blown cancer yet.
Well, you've got a good constitution, so work with it.
Okay. I wish to thank you both again, and keep up the good work.
Okay, and if you do need a source for the Iodorol, email me and I will tell you where I buy mine.
Super. May I have your email address, please?
Deanna@spingola.com or comment@spingola.com.
Oh, thank you so both very, very much.
Oh,
take
thank
care.
You. Mm-hmm. You too. All righty. As I mentioned, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to call in, and that number is 347-215-7292. So just feel free to call in. She was mentioning cysts, and childhood diseases are something that, as I look back at my childhood, and I had chronic ear infections and my tonsils were a problem. I had eczema. I had cysts on one of my ovaries. Just all kinds of things. And as I look back, and as I've listened to you, I thought, it's probably iodine.
The vaccines would have displaced the iodine, because that's what mercury does. You have to understand that, you live in the Midwest, I live in Windsor, we're in the same region, basically, and, when you look at the reason why that issue occurred is because back in 1956, the United States was doing nuclear testing off the coast of Alaska with the idea that the fallout would fall on the Russian turf, and they didn't know enough about the jet stream at that time, so what happened was the jet stream would pick up from the Pacific or up around Alaska and come right across North America. Well, what wound up happening was that fallout went right across Canada and the United States, and as a result, the soil was completely depleted of iodine. This is one of the worst areas for thyroid issues here, right where I live here and in Detroit, and that carried all the way down to the Carolinas. So a lot of the women, when they were growing up and developing, a lot of us were of ethnic origins, whatever the ethnicity may be, and a lot of the diet that the initial, the predecessors ate had a lot of seafood in their diet for a lot of them. So we don't have that here. And then the iodine that we would be normally getting through the crop or whatever was no longer there either. So then when they put that little bit of iodine in the salt, you would have to eat a pound and a half of iodized salt to get the equivalent of one drop of Lugol's or a pill of Iodorol. So you'd never be able to do it.
Wow. And the implications are that you can't really take too much iodine. Is there an issue with taking too much?
I guess you'd have to define the parameter of what is too much. He used to treat syphilis of the brain and syphilis of the spine with about 320 drops of iodine a day.
Yikes.
So again, it's what is too much? I've had people here use 20 drops three times a day to treat mental issues and depression issues, which work very well. I mean, you don't stay on it. Basically, you treat for a couple weeks and you go back down. Generally speaking, the idea is if you've never done it before, 1 to 4 drops a day, because of the level of depletion in the person's body, you're going to, 4 drops a day would top you off or get you closer to the top within a 3 or 4 month time frame. 1 drop a day would take about a year. So again, it would all depend on how you define the parameter of too much. If you're talking therapeutic, you take what you need. If you're talking maintenance, then you would take a lower dose.
Okay. All righty. Okay. As I mentioned, if you have a question, feel free to call in at 347-215-7292. Let's see if there's some questions in the chat room. Our chatters? Nope. Okay. I have been looking a lot at the pharmaceutical drugs and particularly the vaccines, and some of the side effects are absolutely, I mean, there's a big long list of side effects on all of these pharmaceutical drugs. It is amazing that anybody would even dare to take them.
Now, are we talking about fully functioning, mentally aligned people, or are we talking people on autopilot?
Well, unfortunately, I think 95% of the population is on autopilot, okay, and is very brainwashed. And
that's what I'm saying. So who are we talking to? There's a really good video on the YouTube. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but if you haven't seen it, the video was done based on studies done in the 1980s. It was done in Australia. They're using the information from the United States. It's called Vaccination, the Hidden Truth. Now, it's a very rudimentary, fundamental thing, but when you look at that video, if you can still feel after watching that video that you need to be vaccinated, you can have my vaccines, my grandchildren's vaccines, my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-children's vaccines. I won't be around then, but you can have them all if you're that adamant about vaccines. They have never cured or treated anything. There is absolutely no evidence indicating that they ever cured anything. None. Some people argue, well, we have lost this, we have lost that, but then they're not seeing, yeah, we've shut that down, but we've created these three or four monsters as a result of using vaccines. So again, there is absolutely no issue. We've done a video as well on the humidifier video. In the humidifier video, I do a 10-minute segment on what's in the vaccines and the side effects. I had a woman actually contact me from the United Kingdom and said first she was in hysterics and she didn't know whether to laugh or cry because, you know, we were entertaining at the same time. But when we got into that vaccine thing, she had just gave her child the MMR 3 days before she saw the video. And so at that point, she literally crapped herself thinking, oh, what did I do? Now, this is a common theme among a lot of people. Dr. Wakefield was the one that once exposed the MMR, and they have been since then trying to, shoot him down or disreputate his findings. But you look at that video, Vaccination, the Hidden Truth, it's probably about a 45-minute-hour video, and you will see, even back then, when the vaccines evolved or devolved, depending on your perspective, the side effects they were having with people in Australia were getting these vaccines. You know, kids that were just turning blue and all kinds of colors and everything else. So, I mean, there is absolutely no valid research at all, other than the fact the only reason why you would induce the vaccine is to inject genetic material or nanoparticles in the body that would adhere to the system and literally start shutting down bodily functions or organ functions. That's all they do.
Right, and most of the problems that they supposedly invented the vaccines for were already eradicated because of simply better hygiene and washing your hands and that kind of thing.
some things were dying on their own. Whooping cough was dying on its own until they reintroduced the vaccine. As soon as they introduced it, the whooping cough jumped right back up again. Polio was the same thing. Polio was dying out on its own. It was eradicating itself. And then what happened was when they introduced the polio vaccine using the monkey gene, monkey kidneys, to produce the stuff, it produced all kinds of unwanted genetic effects in the human body. You know, we were crossing the genetic barrier even back then in the 50s when they came out with this stuff. So I don't seriously, in my thinking, it was another form of weaponizing chemicals in the body to create the anomalies that we've got today.
Wow. Okay. Questions from the chat room. What about the detox symptoms that one might have when they are on a detox program and they have flu-like symptoms? How would you alleviate those? Or is it the program that they're on?
Depends what it is. I mean, sometimes a flu-like symptom, a nausea or diarrhea, that's part of the, again, sometimes it's not necessarily a die-off, but it could be a reaction what they're taking. Like I said, you've got stuff lined in your system that you have no idea has been sitting there for some time. Then you take something, and then there's this reaction going on, and that's because one of the thing is interacting with the other. The diarrhea is something that's part of the flushing effect that the body goes through. The sweating is another part of the effect that the body goes through as far as removing things from the body. I mean, you're going to breathe it out, pee it out, poop it out, sweat it out. You know, that's what happens. Sometimes you do get aches and pains, again, because you might have something stuck in those areas, metals or other pathogens that may have found a hiding place in your body. So this is, again, that is to be expected. Sometimes the simplest thing to alleviate the nausea, something as simple as making a cinnamon tea or ginger and cinnamon tea or a ginger and peppermint tea, sometimes that can alleviate that. But again, sometimes doing nothing and just allowing your body to break it down and get rid of it, I mean, it all depends on, you know, if you can handle anything, if you can drink anything down. So it all depends, you know. And again, it depends what you're detoxifying from. So this is the other thing, too. I mean, we were using sodium thiosulfate to pull stuff out. As far as I could tell, that's probably been the best thing I've ever seen really be effective as far as doing a very thorough job at eliminating things that are built up in the colon, in the liver. Seems to target the body really well. It seems to be able to target people. If you got a more gallons issue going on, any polymer, metals, crystals, whatever might be inside the system, it seems to have a drawing effect to pull that out. The one interesting element there is when it does do a fine job of purging, you find you do not eat as much, you're not as hungry, you can eat a small meal and be satisfied as opposed to constantly eating, because now everything in the system is now back to normal or functioning the way it should.
Right, and that stuff costs $3.25, I think.
But the sodium thiosulfate, oh, you bought a small one.
Oh, I guess I did. Well, I bought two.
Oh, how big? 500 gram or?
I'd have to run and get it out of my apothecary, my upstairs apothecary.
Yeah, I usually buy it by a 10-pound tub, and that's usually about $30.
Oh, wow. All righty. We did mention magnesium stearate yesterday, but somebody wants to know if that is safe, because sometimes people use that in their, manufacturers use that in their capsules. And we talked yesterday that really better off doing your own capsules. Just get a little capsule machine.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I don't think magnesium stearate is the boogeyman that you need to be concerned about. I think it's because of all the other elements you've been consuming in your body for so long that they're, again, maybe reacting with something below. Not saying it's safe, but I don't think it is the boogeyman they made. There are worse things in your supplements today than magnesium stearate. You've got polymers in your supplements. You've got titanium dioxide in your supplements. You've got soy in your supplements. You've got metals in your supplements like aluminum lake and all these other things. So again, I don't find that to be that's probably the least of my concerns if I'm using a supplement. If I'm buying one, I'm looking at the fact that it doesn't have the cross-caramelase in it, which is basically a polymer. Does it have titanium dioxide, which is the whitening agent? Does it have in it TVP, HVP, which are soy, which are usually bound as a chelate to the minerals, which means it's just going to bind with the mineral and take it out of your body? You know, does it have, is it in a gelatinous form or it's containing some kind of fat in it? And if you are buying stuff that has fats in the gelatinous capsules, puncture the capsule, drain out the components and throw away the capsule. But if you can make your own, that is by far the best thing you could do.
All righty. What about colloidal silver? I know you have a recipe where people can make their own. I do happen to have a generator, but...
Okay. I mean, the colloidal silver, again, I have no problem with. I have no problem with any kind of colloidal. It's the nano silvers I'm having an issue with. I got one report showing that people use nano silvers, and this was done. The study was done in Norway, not in the United States. And some people say, well, the FDA is against colloidal silver. Well, they are against colloidal silver, but anything nano-wise is dangerous. Nobody should be playing with any kind of nano. I don't care what it is, nano iodine, nano silver, nano gold. These things do not react the same as a normal mineral in the body. Colloids, I have no problem with. They absorb, they utilize. The research I've got indicates that you should be using anything above 70 parts per million for it to be effective against some of the current pathogens that are being used. Again, use it. I mean, we've made it. We've been criticized heavily on the show, on the video, but I've never seen any of the effects that some of these people are saying that you're going to get. You will not turn blue by using colloidal silver unless you're using an excessive amount of it. The blue...
I saw that blue man.
He was a copper overload, not a silver one. He was using copper, silver-plated copper spoons. So what was happening was he was taking an overload of copper, which is silver. That's what caused the blue, that blue hue. Silver will not get turn you blue like that. So that's a lot of baloney.
Okay.
The thing is, I mean, and again... Silver is not something you should be using every day anyway. I mean, it's something you should use for a short interim and then a break should be taken from it. That's how they used to use it in the old days. Today they are selling this stuff 10 parts per million and they want you to take it every day. And if it's doing anything, I don't know for some people, but the one thing it will do, it will disrupt the bacterial flora in the colon. So it's not something you want to be using. And then there's the other argument.
Right, too, because it would kill that good bacteria.
Sure would. And the other thing they argue is that the particulates are too big if you make it at home, and if they so this is again when you got to look at some of this research nonsense that they point out. Oh, the particles are too big, so you have to buy their product. Well, if the particle is too big, and if the hydrochloric acid breaks it down anyway, it won't matter what the size of the particulate is because you're going to break it down anyhow. So I find that another amusing tidbit. So you got to be careful with some of the marketeers on this stuff. Silver mm-hmm. does have value. I mean, I was just talking to a woman from Yugoslavia, and they were saying back in the day, they would take pure silver coins, they would put them in water, and let them sit there for a couple of days, and then they would draw from the water to heal a lot of the issues. Even, she said, the churches back then would take that same water, put it in the, I forget what you call it, because the Catholics go in and they dab their hand in the stuff, and they do the tic-tac-toe thing, and away they go. And so they, you know, but basically the idea was to put the silver on the body to disinfect the person. So, but that's what they were using back then, was the silver water. And it worked.
Okay. You're so funny.
What they do.
What do you think about electronic microcurrent frequency generators as a means to kill bacteria, viruses, and parasites in the body, like Hulda Clark recommended?
Okay, this is the thing about that. I think they do work for parasites and stuff like that. But today, with the Morgellons, it has a very similar... It's almost the same ideal, same kind of thing. And if you use the zapper, once you got more gallons, it'll spread it through you like wildfire. It'll feed on that current. So you got to make sure you really have a parasite or whatever you're going to be using that stuff on, because any electrical current with the more gallons will activate it like crazy.
Oh, my goodness. Now, would you also, for instance, there are some machines, some gadgets that kind of counteract the radiation from that from smartphone or from smart meters and that kind of thing? Would that be the same?
I got to tell you something. A lot of those gadgets don't work. I'm not a gadget kind of guy to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So for a gadget to do something with me, I mean, I'm critical. I'm like very critical, even with the herbals and the other chemicals that are out there. You know, I mean, because I'm making stuff myself, and then again, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You know, and that's just the way I see things. But a lot of things are being marketed. I've got people who are buying these things that they're wearing to offset computer stuff, and it turns out it doesn't work. I talked to a guy that does actually work with the frequencies in Michigan, and he was telling me basically a lot of these devices don't work primarily because they're attenuated either a higher or lower frequency, so they may stop or may block only to a certain point. If you don't have a good cover on your body, they're not going to work as effective as you think. I mean, when I go to bed at night, I've got in my room, I turned it into somewhat of a Faraday cage. I've got aluminum pieces all along the wall with some copper, and even at bed, I went to a dollar store and bought these aluminum blankets, taped two together, ran two strands, and so now I've got a thing that drapes over my bed so at nighttime I'm not being pummeled with frequencies. And again, that's a very simple and inexpensive way for a lot of people to do this, because a lot of people are not sleeping at 3 in the morning, they're wide awake. So some things like that I see for myself at work. I'm not saying that all the gadgets don't work, but you really got to really scrutinize some of this stuff, and you know, really look at some of these sites that talk about these things, the good and the bad, the pro and the con.
Sure.
Because again, I don't. Some things like the zappers, I think they do work. TENS machines can work as well because it does run a current through your body, and so again, if you do have a parasite or a worm, you could definitely create some discomfort for these things.
But turpentine would work better, and I think would be.
I think that's the route I go with. Now again, I was reading research done back in the 16th century where the doctor gave a woman a shot, 1 ounce, 28 mils of turpentine. And she crapped out a 6-foot worm. So, I mean, before I start zapping and zinging myself, I was talking to some guys on my show about 8 years ago, and what they used to do, when they used to go out to the bush or whatever, if they got bit by a poisonous snake, these guys were tough guys, I got to tell you. They took their battery post and they would shock the area, like they would put one prod on one part and one on the other, and they would run a current through their leg to fry out the poison, and it worked. And something like that would work, and in emergency situations I would do that. They used to do it to their dogs or themselves. So again, I don't think you need to go to that extreme, but if you are bit by something poisonous, this is one way to burn out the proteins that could, before it becomes becomes problematic. So stuff like that will work, but you really gotta, like I said, I don't buy into a lot of things. I've seen these things myself in the health food store. I've seen people use these things. And for 2 weeks, a lot of them will say it works, and then before you know it, they tell you, it doesn't work anymore. They quit wearing them after 2 weeks, so then I think a lot of that was just placebo.
Sure. Okay, getting back to the colloidal silver, when some people say, well, take it once a week or every 2 days or whatever, what are your views on that?
Depends what you're dealing with. Again, back in the day, they used to use it for a couple of days and take a couple of days off.
But you wouldn't take it unless it's directed. I wouldn't just take it just to be taking it. I would take it because I had a particular problem.
Well, again, that's what I'm saying. It would depend on that. But even then, you would be taking a break from it. Usually, if you got a good adequate amount of it in there, parts per million in the system, I mean, usually within a couple of days, you should be able to see some kind of a change. But you might want to take a break from it. You might want to use the sodium thiosulfate to pull out any excess silver accumulation that might be in the body, because that's one of the things that will draw out as well. So again, a guy that turned blue or whatever, he could have used sodium thiosulfate to extricate that stuff out of his body. You know.
Oh.
So again, that's what I'm saying. There are ways to negate this.
Huh. Alrighty. What are your views on? Somebody wants to know what you think about Dr. O'Hara's probiotics.
Not very much.
Okay. That was quick and easy.
It's a soy-based product. I don't have a whole lot of I can't really say anything good about it. It's just this way.
Okay. What about Natron probiotics?
Natrons are pretty good. I got to say they're pretty good. They're high end. They're usually non-soy. I've not seen one that's soy-based anyway, not recently, but their products are pretty good. There's actually one out there now that's got over 400 billion culture cells. There's two companies. One of them does use the soy in their mix. I don't know why they went that route, but they did. But they do have them out there. But, yeah, Natron is a pretty good line.
Okay. What are your views on essential oils?
They rock. I can't, when we're using turpentine, what are we using? We're using an essential oil.
Oh, okay.
Okay, it's the oil from either the balsam fir or the white pine or some of the pine trees or whatever. That's basically what it is. And so, yeah, essential oils rock. I think essential oils are going to be very key in removing a lot of nanoparticles out of the system because of the way how they penetrate the cells. I think that's going to be a very, very powerful method to be using to help the body extradite these nanoparticles. We're eating them. We're not aware of the fact that we're eating them. We're, you know, a lot of cosmetics, even in the health food industry, are using nanoparticles in their products. They're using titanium dioxide, which for the life of me, I cannot figure out why they would put that in there. For the males, any male that's being exposed to titanium dioxide, it's a testicular cancer problem, respiratory issues as well, respiratory cancers. Nano silver has been known to cause testicular cancer as well, so do not use a nano product of any kind. So these things need to be avoided. So why that's in the health food industry, I have no idea.
Okay. Now, essential oils. There's a lot of oil diffusers where you can put a drop in, some water, and you have a nice steam, or there's others that you can put by your bed. And they're just very fragrant and very nice and soothing. And you also mentioned the 3 o'clock wake-up issue.
Yep.
What causes that?
Smart meters.
Huh. Even if you don't have any in the neighborhood?
If you got towers in your neighborhood, that'll do it. You got to remember, these things are bouncing signals throughout. Even if your house doesn't have it and somebody else does, you will get affected. If your house happens to be a central hub, you're going to get more of it. There's ways around it. You can put one of those aluminum blankets behind your called hydrometers, electrical meters, or whatever you guys call it. Okay, put it behind it. If you are doing a wash or something, seal it. They won't be able to get a reading.
Sure.
But leave it open enough so they can get a reading. But put a blocking agent there. That's usually the cause of a lot of it. They are harping at night at 3 in the morning. I've been outside 3 in the morning, seeing the clouds come undone and seeing the wavy clouds from the from the blast. So, yeah, you're getting that too. 3 in the morning, no matter what time zone you're in, seems to be the time that they are hitting it at its peak between 3 and 3:30. Some people go to bed at 10 o'clock and they're wide awake at around 3-ish, and that's the reason why.
Huh. Now, you mentioned a central hub. Comcast is now allowing people, for instance, if you have Comcast internet service, people can tap into your network if they happen to be driving by or whatever, and legally they can tap into your network and use your network. They call it a hub. And is that the kind of hub you're talking about?
Well, that's one. You got to remember, smart meters are they're on your electrical grid, and they can go through any network that's there. You got to remember, it is a form of spyware if you really sit there and think about it, monitoring everything you're doing in your home, your electrical usage or whatever. When you're talking cable networks, this is another form of, again, interactivity with your home. Your home is no longer a private haven anymore. Back in the 1980s, they had developed something that through your TV, because your TV was on all the time, they could actually fire, they could regulate your thermostat from your television, and that was back then done in the 1980s. I forget what it was called. Livonia, Michigan was the first one to have fiber optics. With fiber optics, they were able to do this back in the 1980s. Livonia, Michigan was one of the first places that had the fiber optics being installed. And remember the Nielsen ratings?
Yes.
They don't do that anymore. They don't have to do that anymore. Just based on your reaction, they can tune into your home. They can get a feedback, the time of the day that this program is on, what you're watching. They can determine what you're watching, what type of programming you like. This is why a lot of the cable and satellite networks now are offering specific packages to people, because the diversity of viewership. They want you to watch TV, so if you're not watching TV, then they can't put things in your head. So they come up with ways to sell you packages that will be more will cater to you, so that you will watch the TV. So this is coming out more and more.
Wow. Alrighty, another question from the chat room. If you are on one detoxification program, would it be wise to use turpentine, maybe once or twice, or, intermittently during another detox?
Usually, that's the hard one. I don't know what they're doing. So, you can try it to see what reaction you get. You got to remember, you're doing a detox program of some kind. You may get a negative reaction with it. You may get an overwhelming reaction with it. You may get something you didn't expect. So again, it would all depend. Usually, turpentine on its own, it's a very potent detoxifying agent as well. So if you're using, like an STS or a sulfur thing, usually those two things was more than enough to clean out parasites, fibers, metals, layers of lining on the colon. That was more than enough. So if you're using something else, again, just approach it with caution. I don't discourage exploration. Just use low at a time to give yourself a gauge.
Okay. The program that I believe this person is on that has asked a question, or a program that I was on before, first you do a hair sample. And then they provide a program. It's from a lab in New Mexico, I believe. They provide some pretty expensive supplements. They don't actually say, okay, it is a detoxification kind of a situation where the selenium and whatever else they put you on is supposed to displace copper or the other things that are negative that the hair sample finds. What are your views on that?
What, the hair sampling?
The hair sampling, and then they might provide, after they do a hair sample, they might provide 6 or 7 supplements, mineral supplements, selenium, and some other, I can't think of some of the other ones.
I don't think the turpentine is going to have a negative reaction that way. It will clean out whatever. Basically, if they're looking at balancing the mineral content in your body, some of that stuff you could buy yourself locally a lot less expensive. There's some merit to it. It doesn't always work for everybody. This is the thing, okay? So once you know what's going on, a lot of times you can take care of these things yourself. You don't need to, sometimes these things are good for diagnostic purposes, so it gives you an idea of what's going on, and then you can go about, again, take care of whatever you're doing. So if you got a copper, overloading of copper in the body, okay, then they're going to give you something to reduce the copper, and they're going to give you these minerals to balance. Usually zinc bounces off copper. Usually if you've got a copper overload, you usually got a zinc deficiency. So just by increasing your zinc can regulate the copper, just like iron. You got too much iron in your body. Well, taking more calcium can neutralize the iron and reduce it down naturally. So it all depends what you're doing.
Okay, yeah. It's about balancing minerals so that you're healthier.
Yeah. There is some credence to it. There is more and more stuff coming out. Some stuff is, I'm liking some of the ideas that are coming out today, where they're actually testing your body on a DNA level or a genetic level to see where, to give you things that work with your genetic code. We're far, far, far from having that done right yet, but the idea is sound, because, again, we are dealing with nanoparticulates that can actually bind with the DNA and the genetic code. Your So you may need something on a genetic level to offset some of these things that are attacking that part of us.
Okay. On your website, you have something called Catalog, and it's a list of remedies, literature, DVDs and CDs, and specialty items, old and new remedies, and tonics to maintain and restore health and vitality. See, our listeners want to know everything that you know, and we want to know it immediately. We'd like to have some sort of a download so that we have all the information that you have.
Uh-huh.
Is there some sort of magic thing that you can do for us here?
Magic thing. Yeah, as it is, I'm not sleeping now, so you just want me to be awake weeks at a time. Actually, I'm thinking about designing something. It's just in my head right now, a platform where it's been done before. I just haven't seen it in a while. There used to be a nutritherapy chart years ago, and it was really well done. It would have to be modified for today's times, but what it was a chart where, okay, if you had, you know, they would give you a list of things that you could take, whether it be vitamins, homeopathic, herbals, supplements, whatever, and if you had a condition, this is what you could do. But that's going to be a full-time venture, and somehow, some way, I got to find a way and time to do this. But that was the idea, to develop some sort of a database or some kind of a access point. We can go in, if you have a condition, you know, we can have, okay, so you got a heart condition, for instance, so you click on the heart condition, so or heart remedy, and then you can click down on the list all the things that you can help, again, rebuild and regenerate the heart.
Yeah.
And then beside them, some things that might be able to, again, why, what they're used, how they're used, and the methodology in making this stuff. But that, like I said, is a huge, huge time consumer. If I was a millionaire today, I could do it in a week. You know, I could spend, I can devote the time to it. Right now, we're just trying to, okay, like Dave and myself with the YouTube, we're just trying to show people at this point, at this juncture, to how you can make things and get you on the path of research. And you're going to get burned on the research because, again, you got to remember, you know, the platforms that are there today, you have to understand the sabotaging of health has been going on for quite some time. The USDA has been sabotaging the health of the American people since 1904.
Right.
People don't realize that the USDA does not represent an organization that's on your side. In fact, they have purposely taken out of the system things that do work and have worked well as far as curing the body. And what they've allowed in the system, and if it does have any kind of credence, they have compromised it. So when we're talking research, a lot of times they're going to tell you an old biblical saying, test all things and hold fast to what is good or what works, in a paraphrase form. And that's the best suggestion I can give you, you know, in regards to that. Just don't accept everything you're reading as gospel. Don't just read the study and say, oh, this works on this, without really reading the study and understanding how they put it together, how they formulated it. Because like I said, we're talking about the artemisinin one, which, you know, cures breast cancer. But as you can see, 500,000 pounds of a material in a 500 milliliter bottle, that's like a 17-ounce bottle. That isn't going to fly. That's just not going to work.
Sure.
So, you know, the study has been contorted. So when you're looking at a lot of these things, again, you are going to be going through a state of confusion until you get accustomed to how you read the studies. You know, and these are things I'm giving you clues on. Read the study. Understand the study. Look at the conditions. Look what they were targeting. Don't just look at the study as, oh, yeah, it does this, because sometimes you read the study, it has nothing to do with the title. This is another thing. So, again, when we're looking at a lot of this stuff that we're, again, dealing with today, and we're looking at these studies, read them and understand them. If anybody is interested in vitamin C, for instance, go look at Dr. Klenner's research, Dr. Cathcart's research, Dr. Roth, Dr. Pauling. These are the guys you want to read, because these guys are the mavericks of the day. They did not go along. They didn't kiss anybody's backside. They looked at the research. They tried the things out. They saw the results. Some people will say, well, that's empirical evidence. Some people might say some other kind of evidence. The bottom line is, where the rubber met the road is where they got the results, and that's what you got to look at. do not allow yourself the comfort, because this is what happens, people get comfortable, the comfort of somebody trying to dissuade you, discourage you, or distract you with some kind of question. Read the studies, and then, again, do your own experiments on the stuff. Sometimes you'll get it right, sometimes you'll get it wrong, but do your own, and this way you get your own, I got criticized with the Code of Silver on my webpage, yet none of the things that I have been criticized for have I seen manifest in anybody. You know, we've given this stuff to dogs, we've given this stuff to cats, horses, people.
Oh, what would you give it to cats for?
Anything. If they got an allergic reaction, if they got a cold, if they got some kind of allergies, if they've got some kind of infection, it works. Just put it in the water and let them drink it. We've got people here doing it all the time in Windsor. They make their own, just like we show them on the YouTube, and they give it to the pets. And if they've got any kind of respiratory infection, usually within a day or so, it clears them up.
How about turpentine? Would you give a cat turpentine?
I would. If the silver didn't do anything, or the iodine, because the first thing I go with is iodine, and if not iodine, maybe I'll go with silver, maybe I'll go with something else.
Okay, so a cat, you could give a cat iodine.
Anything you're taking, you got to remember, the discoveries of this stuff was usually done with animals before they gave it to us.
Sure.
And you got to remember, the animals are going to get these components. Okay, cats and dogs are carnivores. So they would have gotten it to the predators. As a predator, they would have gotten to the meats they were eating. If the animals were grazing grasses and stuff, they would have got a lot of mineral content just from eating the animal protein or for the protein. So when we're feeding the animals a box, bag, or canned product, that's when these animals would start getting sick, developing allergies, they'd start developing diabetes, tooth decay, arthritis, and a whole host of other unwanted issues, fungal growth in their heads. You know, it's from the food that's being sold today.
Ah, okay. Very good. What do you think about the systemic fungal overgrowth, like yeast?
That's coming from genetics. It's not a chronic disease. A lot of that chronic disease is a lot of nonsense. We never had this kind of issue 50 years ago. It was not this prevalent, and something changed. So what changed was, we genetically engineered the grains and the soy, and it broke down, and these things broke down the immune system, and then the overgrowth, who usually candida worked with our bodies back in the day as a result of feeding on the overgrowth. You're eating genetic material, and you're altering the genetics in your body, and this is why we're having the problems we've got going on today.
Sure. Somebody in the chat room said you don't want to give garlic to your cats. I don't think my cats would eat garlic.
Oh, no, that's a mess. We've given garlic to cats and dogs with no side effect whatsoever. It actually benefited them. So, again, if they're sick, trust me, they'll eat. You got to remember, the animals are not stupid, and if you give them small amounts of it, it's not going to cause a problem. And, again, we've never really seen garlic cause a cat or a dog any issue, even though they tell you not to use it. And I've got people, farmers and stuff, you've given their pets garlic here, cats and dogs, and it's fine. There are no side effects, and it revives them from some of the issues that are going on. So, again, that's another one of those myths. I think it would all depend on how much you're going to give them.
Okay, what about colostrum? Which kind do you think is better? Do you think that the powder or the fresh colostrum?
Fresh is always best. That's kind of hard to get. But because, again, you got to find a farmer that's going to sell you unpasteurized milk. And where
sure.
I'm at, like I said, they don't have any testicular fortitude anymore here. They just sort of bend over and, we can't sell it to you kind of thing. So when I was in Arizona, I was able to get unpasteurized milk, but here you can't. So if you got a farmer that can sell you unpasteurized milk or will sell it to you and they can sell you the colostrum, use it.
Now, can you give cats colostrum without any problem?
Definitely. Any animal.
Okay. Because vets will tell you, don't give any milk products to a cat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really.
Really?
Okay.
Are these vets mentally challenged or what?
Yes.
Seriously.
Yes. All righty. You've mentioned homeopathic medicine. What the heck is homeopathic medicine, and what are your views of it, and how do you get trained as a homeopathic physician?
Okay. The training part, you'd have to go to some sort of institution that trains on homeopathy. Homeopathy works in a completely different range. It works on an energy signature. And the way it works is the more you dilute a product, the more the energy signature of that product arises. And the way they treat people is they treat people with whatever pathogen you have or condition you have. They'll give you they'll give you the energy signature of the very same thing you've been violated with to help trigger an immune response with the body. I don't particularly use homeopathy. I'm not against using it. It's just I've got other things that I use that I'm also finding works very well. If someone does need a homeopath, I send them to people that I think are very good at it. I've talked to other herbalists who have incorporated that into their repertoire. They find that sometimes the herbs, no matter how diluted they are too overpowering for some people because of they've been so compromised. And so they have given homeopathy to these people, and they have found it helped kickstart them back to normal. So again, does it work? I've seen people who have used it, and it has benefited them tremendously. Just like anything else, not everything works for everybody. So again, you need to find somebody who also knows this stuff really well. I knew a homeopath up in London. He was an East Indian fellow. He moved his practice down to Florida, and he was treating all kinds of people with all kinds of stuff with a good deal of success.
Mm-hmm. What are your views on Chinese medicine? When I went to China in 2007, I was on a cruise ship going down the Yangtze River, which, by the way, smelled like gasoline. And I had
turpentine.
Yeah, no, it was pretty awful, and you could just see it floating on the water, just in certain areas. You know, but
I have no problem with Chinese medicines. I've been using them for 25 years or longer. I still use them today. I just went and bought some horny goat wheat from a Chinese market that I deal with. I've known the family for years. I've seen it work. I mean, I use the Chinese, four Chinese herbs or five Chinese herbs to treat hepatitis C, which just seemed to have cured one person of it. So I don't have a problem. I have a bigger problem with what goes on in the United States and Canada. I have a bigger issue there. I mean, see, with Chinese stuff or Japanese stuff or Arabic stuff or African stuff, I can flat out not buy it. But when I have stuff going on in my own country or North America that is genetically altered or adding nanoparticles to it and not labeling it, I have a problem with that. You know, when I go to a store, for instance, and I'm seeing something made in China, I have the option at this point not to buy it. You know, if you don't want to buy something made in China, don't go to Walmart because everything they're getting is from China. But if I'm going to go buy a food product or a herbal product, for that matter, or a supplement, and I've got all kinds of contaminations going on in these products, I have a bigger issue with that than I do something coming from overseas or outside the country, because this is within our own country, and we're having problems. So and they're not even labeling genetics. So the Chinese do not label their genetic stuff. Doesn't mean people are not buying them. It just means that they've got them labeled. I was down in New Zealand. They label their GMOs down there too. People still buy them, but I mean, but at least they're there, so you have the option. So I don't have a problem using Chinese herbs or East Indian herbs or North American Indian herbs or Canadian or American herbs or European stuff, African stuff. I don't have a problem with it. A friend of mine went down to Jamaica, brought me back some manbac, you know. So now I'm playing with that. You know, for those of you who don't know what manbac is, it was a herb used in the Jamaican culture to help fortify the back, because the slaves at the time used to work out in the fields and they would wind up a lot of aches and pains. And one of the things that manbac did, it helped re-fortify the spinal region, the lower end, and the kidneys. It also helped with the reproductive part, as well as for sex and sexual stimulation. But again, it's a herb that's used, and I've incorporated it with some of the stuff I'm doing here. Now, I wish I'd get more of it. It's pretty hard to get, but you know, when you have friends, you can get things.
Sure, sure. There's something, slippery elm bark.
Yeah.
Is that good for arthritis and bone issues and stuff?
It's normally used as a lubricant for the intestinal tract. It's normally used as a healant for the digestive system. I guess it all depends on what you're combining it with, for it to be of any real effect. I think that's probably more the case.
Sure. Now, for those who would like to make their own capsules, you mentioned yesterday that you can combine several different things into one capsule. And I thought, well, I hadn't thought about doing that, and certainly would cut down the number of capsules that you would take. depending on how much stuff you want to consume. So, I think that's, I don't know where I'm going with this, but I guess I'm just thinking out loud.
It's okay, no problem. You're allowed. This is your show. You can do this.
Okay. What is Hoodia?
Hoodia is an African herb that they were selling years ago as a means, as a weight loss product. Didn't really work too well. Well, the reason, one of the reasons why it didn't work too well is because a lot of the byproducts or the leftover was what was sold outside of Africa, because it was only a limited amount. A lot of the weight loss products do not work, period. They just are a waste of money. You got a TV celebrity on TV just selling you a dietary product that we used back in the 90s, doesn't work. The only thing that you're going to lose there weight loss wise is the thickness of your wallet. So only two things I've ever seen work in the health food industry in regard to weight loss or body mass management. One of them was an ephedrine caffeine combination, which worked extremely well. And the other one was a cider vinegar with kelp, less than B6. That also worked really well. The rest of the products was a crapshoot.
Wow. Okay, I have a couple questions, one from email and one from the chat room. How do you repair connective tissue damage from chemotherapy strength dose of IV antibiotic Levaquin? Levaquin is the worst. I went into anaphylactic shock with Levaquin. It is terrible. But it does cause connective tissue damage. So how do you repair? This is from the chat room.
Basically, you might want to combine, want to make Jell-O. How are you going to make Jell-O? Basically, you're going to take gelatin and you're going to combine it with comfrey root tea. So make your tea with the comfrey root and then mix it with your gelatin in a bowl and add a little maple syrup to sweeten it up and start consuming that. That is probably one of the best bodybuilding infrastructure products you could ever use. You might want to use, we were talking about plantain. It's another way of doing it, mixing plantain tea with gelatin. This will also work. Consuming aloe vera as well. You might want to use MSM as well, because MSM does help cure the, can work with the inflammation. Lysine and vitamin C, you want to take maybe mega doses of this as well, because again, it helps in the production of collagen. I'm working on something right now, a mixture of different herbals, using horny goat weed, deer antler, oxney root, manbac and hawthorn berry, for that reason, for connective tissue and bone regrowth. Everyone knows that horny goat weed will make you horny, right? You eat horny goat weed, you're going to have sex, that kind of
thing. When I looked at that, I thought, who wants to have a horny goat around? I mean,
yeah, no, horny goat weed is what they used to feed goats to get them going. But the one thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, it really does mean that.
Yeah, it does mean that.
Oh, gosh.
I know how much you like talking about the reproductive system. Anyway, anyhow, but the horny goat weed, one of the things about it that's really interesting, the studies they've done on it, is it increases the osteoclast or the rebuilding of the bone. And so does deer antler. And on the same token, it does, they do affect the reproductive system because they do produce testosterone or help in the production or releasing testosterone. But it is a very powerful restorer of the bone as well. So this is something that I'm playing with because of the damage from more gallons that I've been afflicted with. And so that's been a lot of fun, I got to tell you. So again, stuff like this is you may want to consider using. Don't just, see, you got to remember, the health food industry will polarize you. Horny goat weed, good for sex, erectile dysfunction, blah, blah, blah. But when you start peeling the onion behind some of these things, you may find that they have other very, very beneficial effects that, you know, that should be looked at.
Okay.
You're embarrassed. Why are you embarrassed?
I don't know.
We're talking about goats.
Do you have some sort? Do you have spyware in my office or what? Because my face is red.
I'm looking at your chat thing here. He says I'm so embarrassed.
Oh,
I don't know why you're embarrassed. It's, you know,
hey, who are you in the chat room? Who are you?
I don't know who I am here. I tried getting in here.
Okay, are you an anon or what?
I could be an anon.
An anon.
You're an anon. Hey, really? I'm an anon. Okay.
Okay. From the email, what about somebody that has indigestion and acidic diarrhea. What would you do? What would you assume from that?
Assume? Go to Walmart, take out your stomach and your colon, trade it in for a new one. No more problems.
Seriously.
Are they
missing hydrochloric acid?
Could be something going on, maybe lack of taurine, lack of B5. What was wrong with the stomach again?
Indigestion.
Acid indigestion. Okay, well, what are you eating? You know, let's get back to that. Are you eating grains? Are you eating rice? Are you eating pasta, bread, cereal, oatmeal? Are you eating any of that crap? Are you eating, you know, macaroni and cheese? Are you eating soy? You know,
this person is pretty, you know, pretty health-oriented and doesn't...
Oh, yeah, but a lot of health-oriented people don't read their labels. You know, a lot of these components I mentioned could be in the foods they're eating.
Okay.
So, again, I mean, that's where I first would look at. I would reevaluate what you're eating, start looking at some of the components you're eating. If everything is okay at that point, what type of fats are you eating? Again, maybe you might want to use taurine. Maybe you might want to use... You might want to increase your hydrochloric acid. Sometimes a hydrochloric acid deficiency can create that problem. Acid stomach, not producing enough acid. Usually when you have an acidic stomach, it's something going on there. It's not breaking something down. Or if you're producing too much acid, then basically it's a real simple solution by just taking a baking soda, magnesium solution and drink it down. That will neutralize the acid. But if it's something that's going on there, if you've got a bacteria happening down there or something else happening, the stomach's going to react to trying to burning it out. And if you're not producing enough acid, it doesn't work.
Okay, so maybe have her increase the hydrochloric acid.
Yeah.
And would that also mean increasing digestion enzymes?
You could. I mean... I would start off with the acid thing first.
Okay.
See if that will rectify it, and then if not, then you incorporate digestive enzymes. Again, if you're having diarrhea, well, the simplest way to eliminate diarrhea is use applesauce. You know, take a fresh apple, peel it, chop it up, throw it in the blender, add a little water, turn it into mush, and consume it. And that in itself may alleviate any acidity going on in the stomach as well. There's pectin in apples that can pull out a lot of stuff and draw out poisons as well. So, again,
okay.
This is another way of eliminating the diarrhea.
That's what I like about you is that you don't say, get yourself a jar of applesauce. You say, peel some apples, and you didn't mention anything about cooking.
No, you don't cook them.
Okay.
Don't cook them. I mean, that's the reason why I don't tell you to go buy a bottle of applesauce because it's cooked out. You might get some value of it, but I mean, I want the quercetin in the apple. I want the, you know, I want the chromium in the apple. I want the cyanide that's in the apple. It's seeds.
Mm-hmm.
I want the whole thing. You know, I want to be able to kill cancer. I want to be able to pull out poisons. I want the pectin in the fiber in the apple to absorb the excess moisture in the colon. So it's, you know, I want that all intact. I don't want to.
So you're saying to grind up the seeds because they have cyanide in them?
Yep.
But you do peel your apple because of the wax that might be on it?
And the pesticides.
Okay.
You got to remember, some of the pesticides are sealed. So we were talking a little bit yesterday about nanoparticles. I mean, they're spraying nanoparticles in the orchards and in the fields now. And one report I've got, and it's on the script of the show as well, for June 2014, is that they had the pears that were sprayed with nano silver, 4 days of rinsing, washing, and soaking, they couldn't get it out. It had penetrated even into the pear. So again, you know, this is why I tell you, peel off a lot of these things because today you no longer have that, again, that luxury or that comfort of thinking you're getting something safe. Now again, if you're buying it from a farmer and you know the farmer, you know they're not spraying, you know, junk in their stuff, again, you know, go with the flow. I mean, I would still tell you to buy locally as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it's coming from overseas, we have no idea what it's getting, and chances are if it's come through the United States, it has been irradiated, so there's a good chance that whatever value you've got getting in your food has been diminished down to next to, about down to 5% is what I get.
Sure.
So, again, if you're buying an apple from a farmer down the road, well, at least that apple hasn't been irradiated and hasn't had a lot of components. I would tell you to peel it for chemtrail reasons because there's chemtrail crap falling on them. You know, then again, if they're spraying it with some kind of spray, you want to peel that off. Some of that you just cannot wash off.
Okay. Someone in the chat room, well, you're in the chat room. You can see who's in the chat room. She said, or he said, I get so frustrated with food choices. Somewhere, someone will say, no meat, no soy, no grains, no sugar, no tubers, no nuts, no seeds. What the heck am I supposed to eat? Do you list somewhere on your website what you should eat? And you've kind of implied that. I mean, you've talked about cultured food, you've talked about fermented food, you've talked about raw milk, you've told us how to cook chicken, and you said no grains, no soy. And that is something that we should all adhere to. No soy. No matter how they fix it. No soy.
No, none. Listen, I'm an omnivore. I believe in what they call the omnivore diet. Today we got raw people eating raw, which is basically a glorified form of vegetarianism with some raw meat, which I think is crazy. Anybody eating raw meat today, I think, has got a rock in their head, especially what they're feeding the animals and what they're exposed to and the vaccines. I think today, if you're not cooking your meat, you're asking for parasites and other kind of pathogenic material that has been genetically altered. So I think you got to be a bit daft on that one. You got to remember, when you're talking about all these different types of eating, I believe you should use dairy. I believe you should use unpasteurized milk. I think everybody should. If we were giving our kids unpasteurized dairy products, 90% of their illnesses would not even occur at the early stages of life. The ones that won the Nobel Peace Prize, most of the scientists who won the Nobel Peace Prize used unpasteurized milk. This has been a direct connection to this. You should be using cheeses, and you should be using cottage cheeses, again, with fat, not using fat-free. If you want to eat meat, as long as it's prepared properly, I don't see a problem with it. If you want to eat poultry, I don't see a problem with it. Eggs, lamb. I'm not a big fan of eating pork because of what pork eats and because of the high sugar content in pork. So I'm not a promoter of pork. But again, I'm not going to tell you not to eat it if you know how to neutralize the sugar and make sure that you cook it so that the parasites that may be in the meat is neutralized. So I'm not going to tell you not to eat it. I don't eat it.
Right.
If you want to eat fish, again, if you're neutralizing the mercury in the fish, if you're neutralizing the toxin, there's no reason why you can't eat this. A lot of these restrictions that are there primarily are for people who may be having a health condition that, again, a particular food may agitate it. You know, they make all these studies, again, no meat. The reason why you're telling you not to eat meat so they can sell you soy. A lot of these studies were done way back in the 80s. Again, you shouldn't eat this, you shouldn't eat that, because they were trying to promote a soy product to sell you soy. This is all what it was all about.
Right.
Whey protein is a far superior protein than any soy or pea or rice protein you will ever buy.
Oh,
or
is
hemp.
That right? Okay.
By far. By far.
If you
register them on what they call a biological value, basically, a biological value is a determination of how much of the aminos or protein you're going to absorb. Whey protein isolates are at 92. Egg protein is at 93. Yeah, gelatin to egg protein is at 99. The highest you can go is 100.
Wow.
So when you're looking at soy is at between 47 and 50. Peanut is between 47 and 50. Pea protein is around 45, between 40 and 45. Rice is down around 39 to 44. So these are really low-end garbage proteins that, again, even if you combine them, rice with, let's say, bean, the phytate content of the rice and the bean will actually pull minerals out of your body. So, again, you know, it's all about how you look at what you're looking at. And, again, who's trying to sell you what?
Sure. Now, what about giving a dog raw meat?
Yeah, definitely. Why not? Once in a while, isn't going to hurt them. But then, again, make sure you give them other things thereafter to minimize or mitigate any possible potential parasite issue.
Okay.
But remember, they've been domesticated. In the wild, they would produce enough hydrochloric acid. To break down some of these parasites.
Okay. But that is raw meat from a good farmer that grass-fed.
Yeah, that doesn't mean they won't get a parasite. It might be cleaner, but it doesn't mean they won't get a parasite.
Okay. Well, gosh, we've run out of time. I thought we could probably go another hour, but we can't. But, oh, what a lot of information you've given to us, and I'm so thankful for you being on the program today. So
thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so very, very much. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Oh, we've got to have some clapping here.
Clapping? Okay.
Yes, we have to. Let
me. You sure you don't want me to talk about the reproductive system before I leave? Because I know how it works.
Okay. That's good. That's our audience clapping. Thank you so very much.
All right. It's always good teasing you. It really is.
I know. And I'm so vulnerable to that.
I'm
easy to tease. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Take care, eh?
You too. Bye-bye.